Americans seem to be more sophisticated about Chinese food than we used to be. More of us go out for dim sum, and fewer of us utter the words chop suey. My guest Ken Hom is an authority on the traditional cooking styles of China and the Americanization of Chinese cooking in U.S. Chinatowns. He grew up in Chicago, now lives in San Francisco, and makes frequent trips to Hong Kong. His new book, Fragrant Harbor Taste, is about the food of Hong Kong. Its stature as an international city has made Hong Kong the center of innovation in Chinese cooking. Influences from around the world have been absorbed by Hong Kong chefs, and the chefs have access to the finest Chinese ingredients. But it's only recently that Hong Kong became an important place for culinary innovation.
For a long time, Hong Kong did not have any sort of impact on Chinese cooking because Hong Kong was trying to get itself together. In other words, you know, after 1949, after the communists took over the mainland, you know, Hong Kong was very, you know, chaotic. And during the 50s, I think Hong Kong had that image of like sort of cheap. Remember when you're too young to remember.
Oh, but no, I'm not. Made in Hong Kong.
They used to have these cheap transistor radios, you know, junky things from Hong Kong, plastic flowers and things like that. And I think what started to happen was in the mid-60s, when Hong Kong started getting really prosperous and becoming very cosmopolitan, things started really happening very fast. And in the 70s, you know, with the opening to China, of course, Hong Kong just took off. And what took off with it was its food also.
Well, make me hungry. What's one of the popular dishes being served now in Hong Kong restaurants?
Well, there's this one which is that makes actually my mouth is watering as I'm talking to you, which is a slice of an apple pear, which is a Chinese pear, put together with a thin sort of a shrimp paste, and then it's put together with a scallop like a sandwich, and it's rolled into a very thin flour and deep fried, and it's so delicious because when you put it in your mouth, you have the sweetness of the pear apple, and you have the wonderful seafood flavor of the scallops and the shrimp, and the combination is just out of this world. It's pure ecstasy.
Is this a new dish?
Certainly it is. It's certainly not a traditional Chinese dish, and it's certainly a reflection of the chef who invented this, which is quite a well-known chef who works at a restaurant called Lai Jing King, which is in at the Regent Hotel. And he is very good because he has the backing of the Regent, which is the international hotel, which has a great deal of money. And so he's able to practice and create things.
You know, in your book, you say that it's now illegal to use cat or dog meat for human consumption. Is that considered like a delicacy in Hong Kong?
Well, it is because people feel that, eating cat and dog keeps you warm in the winter. It's illegal, well, partly because of the British, SPCA, and being a dog lover, I've never sampled it myself, and I wouldn't. My dogs would never forgive me. But there are places, though, I think in a new territory, so I've heard rumors that people still tend to eat dog, or else what they do is they cross the border into Canton to have their dog stew.
Did people eat cat and dog because it was accessible and cheap or because it was considered a tasty meat?
It's sort of both. Actually, that's a very interesting question because they ate a dog because they think it's also has medicinal properties. They feel that it's good for your blood. And there's a certain type of dog that they eat. They don't just, eat any type of
mutt.
Yeah, right. Or a nice fluffy sheepdog or something like that. It has to be a certain type of black dog.
Hong Kong reverts from British sovereignty to Chinese in 1997, which is really not very far away at all. Do you think that's going to affect the sense of innovation in Chinese cooking there?
Well, it's a very controversial question, and I think eventually it will. I think it won't happen right away. Maybe in 20 years from now, it certainly won't have, I think, the creativity or innovation unless, the government changes in China, the system changes. Because, you need a sort of a atmosphere or form of democracy to create. You need freedom to create. It's a certain mentality. You have to think that you're free so that you can do something new. And if you don't feel free, you don't feel like creating because you're afraid of what's going to happen if you do something, you know, if you deviate from the line. And that goes for food, too. You know, if this dish is supposed to be like this and it's not, well, you know, you can get in trouble for it.
Ken Ham is my guest, and he's an authority on Chinese cooking and the author of several cookbooks, including his new one, Fragrant Harbor Taste. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the basics of Chinese cooking. There's a lot of Chinese dishes that are centered either around stir-frying or deep-frying. Do you have a sense of why so many Chinese dishes are fried?
Well, the thing is, I think that it's a misperception that a lot of Chinese things are fried. I think it's because Chinese restaurants in Western countries, you know, and that includes Europe and Australia and other places I've been to, they tend to think Westerners like things crispy. And so they fry everything for them. That's why on menus you see everything fried. If you go to a Chinese meal in Hong Kong, only one dish might be fried. And the thing is, things are stir-fried a lot simply because, you know, China traditionally has been fuel short. And actually, I mean, to stir-fry a good dish takes an exquisite skill, because everything is in terms of not even a split second, but a millisecond. And so you have to be very, very skilled, especially to cook professionally in walks. And I tell you, I've observed chefs, Chinese chefs all over the world, and I tell you, Hong Kong chefs have really got their act together.
You know what I love? You go into some place where they have their kitchen exposed, and they have like stir-fried vegetables on the menus. And I'm talking about American restaurants, not Chinese-American restaurants. They put in like an inch of oil bottom of the wok. They throw in some vegetables and stir it around, and you have like vegetables and oil soup.
It's gruesome,
really,
isn't it?
Is.
I know. That's bad cooking. I have to say that lots of cooking in China is like that.
Is it really?
Oh, God. You're swimming in oil.
What's your favorite oil for stir frying?
Well, peanut oil. I tell you why. You know, peanut oil doesn't have cholesterol. But like all oils, oils have fat. But peanut oil is very good because it can be heated up to a very high temperature, which is what you need to stir-fry food properly. Because once it's very hot, you don't need that much oil, and you plunge it in and quickly, you know, stir-fry it. And what people make the mistake of doing is when they're stir-frying vegetables is they tend to add more oil when they think that the vegetables are going to burn. You know, they start panicking and say, oh my God, you know, the vegetables are going to burn and I'm going to be in trouble, so I'm going to keep adding more oil. Well, what they should do if they're stir-frying vegetables is add water. And that's what the Chinese do. They started off with oil, but they add water to finish it.
How come there's virtually no dairy in basic Chinese cooking?
Well, that comes from a Chinese tradition of needing the land to, you know, grow food. I mean, they couldn't afford, you know, having a cow, you know, having dairy cows, and you really have to have a lot of pastoral land. And the thing is, China has always not had that luxury. They needed every single inch to grow food to feed its people. And so they, you know, never had a great need for a lot of dairy products. And also, a lot of Chinese, perhaps because of that, genetically, they have a lactose intolerance.
I was surprised to read in your book that in a Chinese restaurant, I don't mean a Chinese American restaurant, but a Chinese restaurant, that soup is used more as a beverage than as a course.
Yes, in fact, always. I think Chinese don't like, for instance, drink tea when you're eating food. You drink tea after the meal. You never drink it during the meal. In fact, it's rather gauche to be sipping a cup of tea. And what you want to do is, the soup is used to refreshen your palate. You know, the thing about Chinese is that when you eat, you eat. When you drink, you drink. You see, you don't eat and drink together.
I'll be honest with you. I have been to so many Chinese restaurants in America that I'm just so anxious to hear what you have to say about some of them. Now, you used to work in a Chinese restaurant, right? Your uncle, I think it was.
Many, many years ago.
Right, so when you were 11, was it, you worked in his restaurant?
It's a long time ago.
And you describe how he'd have two separate parts of the menu, one for the American customers and one for the Chinese. So what was the difference in what they'd serve to each?
Well, quite a bit of difference. They would serve the chop suey to the non-Chinese, right? And with the Chinese menu, we would have things like sea snail, you know, wonderful things like that. Conch we would have. Actually, real Chinese food.
Was there a lot of snickering at the Americans who came in and ordered chop suey?
Well, you know, this is part of the Chinese problem. You know, Chinese have a very bad sense of superiority. Even, I mean, you can see this ingrained even in the peasants in China. You know, since you're a kid, you're taught that, you know, I mean, the Chinese, you know, are a superior culture. So it's assumed, if you're not Chinese, that you don't understand anything, you know, how to eat well. And this is, of course, a total misconception. In fact, this is one of the main reasons why China is in such a mess, because China still has this mentality. But yes, there were sometimes, you know, I hate to admit, you know, snickering that, oh yeah, this is a non-Chinese, so let's give them this, you know, let's give them, you know, anything that we wouldn't eat. A good example is like a chicken. You know, all the breast meat always went to non-Chinese. Because the best stuff was the thighs and the legs and all this kind of stuff, because that's where all the flavor is and everything. And of course, it just falls into the thing that most non-Chinese do like, you know, chicken breasts. So it just reaffirms the, you know, the right. Chinese, you know, misconception that nobody knows how to eat other than the Chinese.
Now, you actually know something of the history of chop suey?
Well, you know, this is quite an interesting history. I think there are various stories. Actually, I would love to work on a book one day to track down the real history of chop suey, how it was made. Because, you know, the word chop suey actually comes from a Chinese word that means chop suey, which is, you know, all the rest thrown together. But in China, you know, chop suey is actually something very good. But I think what had happened is that a lot of people that came, you know, to work in America as Chinese immigrants, you know, the railroad workers weren't really cooks, and they just threw together a lot of, you know, junk together. And after they couldn't work on the railroads, they went to open up restaurants and laundries, and they decided to throw scraps together and just whip up something. And they probably used this word chop suey, you know, and thinking that people would love it. And of course, it's a way to use up leftovers.
Is there a similar story behind chow mein?
Chow mein is something very Chinese. And it's probably, you know, what we get is chow mein, you know, for a long time in America was actually a sort of American version of it. But chow mein, of course, goes to thousands of years of Chinese history.
You know, when I was a kid and we'd have Chinese food every Sunday night, we always had chow mein. And now when I go to Chinatown restaurants, I don't even see it on the menu.
You know, it shows you how Chinese food is changing in America. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, the evolution of Chinese restaurants and how they've moved from what you used to know as, you know, Chinese food, you know, the sweet and sour pork and the sup gum. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And yes. Spare ribs, egg rolls.
Yes, and that sort of stuff. And now it's moving towards something which is more authentic. And actually, what's really interesting is Hong Kong is having an enormous influence on Chinese restaurants all over the world, and especially in America, because a lot of these immigrants from Hong Kong are coming here, and people are opening up restaurants to cater to those immigrants, because people in Hong Kong are used to good Chinese food. They have a very discerning palate. You know, they've been spoiled. And so they're demanding better food, and in the process, we Americans are benefiting from all that.
Well, you know, one thing I've noticed, though, is that there's still too few Chinatown restaurants that serve without MSG in it.
Well,
you still have to work to,
yes,
well, to get food without it.
Well, you know what I think you have to do is that I think, in fact, I hope a lot of people are listening to this. When they go to a Chinese restaurant, they say, we do not want MSG. And that's the great thing about Hong Kong restaurant. Good Hong Kong restaurants, I mean, it's a given that they don't serve MSG or put any MSG in their food. And I think, you know how it is in America. When the consumer wants something, right, they stop
right.
putting it in, right? You know, no ALAR in the apples and, you know, no MSG in Chinese food.
Well, how did it get there in the first place?
You know, it's an interesting history. I think, well, you know, MSG is actually invented by the Japanese, you know, Ajinomoto.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and that's what it's called. And it crept into China, I think, in the 20s. And, you know, people start using it to flavor, you know, sort of insipid broths, you know, things that didn't have meat, you know, to give it flavor. And, you know, because Chinese traditionally have used things like shrimp or dried fish to pep up things. And so MSG was something which is simple to use, and they just threw it in, and people started using it. It was a shortcut. And, of course, during the 20s and 30s, you know, during the war years, you know, a lot of the Chinese started using that as a shortcut to make things palatable.
Mm-hmm. Ken Ham is my guest, and he's an expert on Chinese cooking, the author of many books, including his new one, Fragrant Harbor Taste. Where were your parents from?
Well, my father was from here, the States, but my mother was from outside of Canton. And after the war, my father, you know, went back to China and met my mother. It makes a wonderful love story, and brought her over here.
What kinds of foods did you grow up eating?
Chinese food. I didn't speak English until I was about 6 years old. And I grew up with all kinds of noodles and rice. In fact, when I was a kid, my mother, you know the Chinese sausages?
No,
you ever
actually,
see them?
No.
These Chinese sausages, they're sort of like dried, cured sausages. And, you know, while other kids in school used to have bologna sandwiches, my mother used to make a thermos for me of rice and Chinese sausages, which she put in the thermos, and I would carry that to school while everybody had sandwiches. But I used to trade them, you know, with the kids. They used to have my rice and sausage, and I used to eat their bologna sandwich because we were very curious about what each other was eating. Because they couldn't believe it, because I had a hot meal while they had this cold piece of meat, you know, with a piece of lettuce or mayonnaise on it.
Do you find that the best restaurant Chinese food in America is served in Chinatowns or in restaurants outside of the Chinatown districts?
I think it depends. Like, for instance, in San Francisco now, if you're talking about the West Coast, for instance, some of the best Chinese restaurants are outside of Chinatown. If you go to a place like Melbourne in Australia, the best Chinese restaurants are in Chinatown. If you go to a place like New York, I tend to think the best Chinese restaurants are in Chinatown in New York. I've been to a place in Chicago. Some of the best Chinese restaurants are in Chinatown. It just depends on where the most, especially there's this influx of new immigrants, where they're going. In San Francisco, they tend to go outside of the Chinatown area, simply perhaps because it's so expensive.
You describe how in Chinese cooking, the rice is always served separately from whatever the other
right,
dishes.
The main dishes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're in the know, do you not mix it together like most Americans do?
Well, the thing is...
in the know, I mean...
if you're Chinese, you're...
Stupid way of putting it.
No, it isn't. Oh, you mean if you're Chinese.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you
yes.
You know what I try to tell people is that, number one, we're not in China.
Right. You know, so don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
About being correct.
I mean, who cares? You know, as long as you have good wine... You have good friends, right? You put that together. I mean, you know, I think food should not have formality.
Why is the rice kept separately, though, in Chinese cooking?
Well, because, you know, rice is a symbol of purity. And the thing is, you eat something spicy. It's almost like bread, for instance. Do you put a main dish on your bread? No, you don't, right? You keep it separately.
Mm-hmm.
Because bread is, you know, sort of used to cleanse the palate, and it's used to go with the food. But you don't put your food on top of it. Well, if you look on rice as bread for the Chinese, then, you know, that's probably the main reason why.
I'm going to ask you to make us hungry again. Mm-hmm. You describe smoked garlic and say that the only place you've ever been able to find it is in Hong Kong. Describe how it's smoked and how it tastes.
It tastes wonderful. I think what they do is the same way they smoke, you know, ducks. They just put it in a smoker, you know, because a lot of things are cooked on charcoal in Hong Kong. And it's a good way also to preserve the garlic. In other words, if they're not going to use it and they're afraid that it will, you know, turn, a good way of keeping it for a longer time is to smoke it. And it has a nice, wonderful, sweet, and rich taste to it. And you can, in fact, it's so wonderful that you can cook it whole and just eat it like a bit of French truffles almost.
That sounds good. Okay, should I ask you the fortune cookie question?
Oh, God. Yes, let's hear it.
Why are there fortune cookies?
Because some ingenious Chinese was in Chinatown and saying, now how can I get Americans to come to my restaurant? Even though they don't like Chinese food. Actually, I got a funny story to tell you about that. Many, many years ago, about 10 years ago, I was in Lubbock, Texas, believe it or not, with a group from the Hong Kong Tourist Association. And we were trying to, you know, it was picked as the target area, I don't know why, to promote, you know, Hong Kong. And it was a very nice place, but we were with a troop of Chinese people, you know, who have never been to America before. They were dancers, they were noodle makers, and I was there to demonstrate cooking. And we went to a Chinese restaurant. Of course, the Chinese have to have Chinese food. You know, they saw these huge, you know, 1.5-pound steaks that the Texans served us, and they couldn't believe it. You know, for each person, you know, the Chinese don't eat that much meat in a month, right? And they couldn't believe their eyes. So we went to this Chinese restaurant, and we ordered Chinese food and everything. It wasn't very good, but at the end, they bought them fortune cookies. And you should have seen the bewilderment on their faces. They couldn't believe it. They said, what is this? And I explained to them in Chinese that they burst out laughing. I mean, they've never seen anything like that. They thought it was very quaint. And they said, only in America.
Well, I thank you so much for talking with us about food. Thank you. I've enjoyed
it.
Thank
you, Terry.